Welcome to a world of vision, a particular vision, a WandaVision, if you will. This is the Bennett Brothers podcast for the WandaVision TV series on Disney Plus. It's a Marvel show, people, done by Marvel Studios, and I'm Jerry Bennett.
And I'm Joel Bennett. Well done, Jerry. That was a clever opening. I really enjoyed that. Thank you for joining us. For those of you who've never joined us,
no. Keep talking about how good I did. That's the most important thing, I guess.
For those of you who never joined us before, thank you. We hope you enjoy the show. We're going to talk about WandaVision. We've talked about every other thing that Marvel has ever done in the Marvel Cinematic Universe or Television Universe or Netflix Universe or all combined together. We haven't. Haven't we talked about everything?
We started with S.H.I.E.L.D. and
there was a couple movies.
There was four movies we didn't actually do.
We should go back and do those then.
Well, we've talked about them.
Jeff. Yeah, we've talked about it.
One of them was Elektra.
So the reason we started doing this podcast is Jerry is a comic book aficionado. He's been reading comic books since the early 19-aughts.
I don't even know.
No. And I have read some comics. And
Joel is 12.
And I've worked in the industry for a while. So there we go.
The comic book industry.
The film industry, which is great. So we just wanted to talk and share our views, and we've been doing this for a long time, and we rather enjoy it. So hopefully you enjoy it too. If you do enjoy it, just go to facebook.com/Bennett Brothers Podcast and subscribe to us there. That shows us you really enjoy this and like that. We're going to spoil this first episode here, first two episodes of WandaVision, which we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about things we like, things we didn't like, Easter eggs, thoughts, and theories, because we do get to propose theories in this. It's a mystery show, which is exciting. And we're going to break it down for you. But before we get into that, we just want to talk about one piece of news that Jerry and I were discussing before we came online. And we want to talk about it and carry on our conversation from
there. The new Space Jam with LeBron James.
Yep, there it is.
Godzilla vs. Kong moved up 2 months to compete with HBO Max version of the Snyder Cut, which is going to be 4 hours long, and Warner Brothers. No, you don't. There's a whole theory in that.
It's a four-hour long movie now.
Yes.
And not a episodic.
Yes. But that's actually not what we want to talk about.
No,
we were briefly talking about, as they're filming the third Spider-Man movie, Spider-Man Homeschooled, or whatever it's called, and they're filming it, and they're talking about who's being shot in it. There's rumors of different people. And since they're rumors, we could talk about them, but maybe we shouldn't.
And is this the third Spider-Man movie, or is this now the, ninth Spider-Man movie? No, eighth Spider-Man movie, if other Spider-Mans might appear in it? I don't know.
Yes. But as we were talking about it, Joel brought up a point as he's heard too much about the movie. He's learned too many spoilers, even officially released ones, which we probably won't talk about since we haven't warned you guys. But obviously, it has to do with other actors playing roles from other properties or other Marvel shows, including, I'll tease one thing. They're theoretically talking about a particular blind lawyer possibly being in this one and possibly having already shot footage. Whether that's true or not, we don't know. It's exciting. I know I shouldn't say I'm spoiling anything, but
blind
it's still
lawyer. Exactly. Gotta narrow it
it's
down
She
more.
Hulk, everybody. So Joel's point is that they do reveal too much in general. And it even comes back to, if you think about the last two Spider-Man films, when they were completely, obviously, done by Marvel. Marvel creates the films, but Sony distributes them. Distributes, that's a better word. And they also are in charge of the marketing. And Sony gives away everything in the trailer. The trailer shows you way too much. Marvel is like, we wish you hadn't done that. We'd rather keep it mysterious. Sony's like, we know better. We know what we're doing. And it's probably going to happen again. And it's basically the deal with Sony. Sony is a crappy company when it comes to this.
Well, I mean, if Sony had their way, they would have revealed J. Jonah Jameson Far From Home. They're like, oh, he's also in this, by the way.
They might have, yeah. They probably wanted to.
Yeah. It's unfortunate.
Look at the trailers that came out for Morbius, which they revealed Michael Keaton theoretically back as the Vulture in the trailer. Which, by the way, that movie's been pushed another 8 months away again.
That's fine. We're going to have a lot of stuff coming out this year. A lot of Marvel stuff coming out this year.
Not the movies. That's all getting pushed again.
Well, I mean, we'll see. I mean, but if it doesn't get pushed, we would have had Black Widow, a Spider-Man movie, The Eternals,
Shang-Chi and the Legend Shang-Chi of the Ten Rings.
Legend. Like, that's four Marvel movies right there. Yep. And then all the, all the Disney Plus shows, WandaVision, Captain America, not Captain America, Winter Soldier and Falcon. Falcon and Winter Soldier. What order are they going?
Falcon and Winter Soldier, followed by Loki, followed by What If, followed by, theoretically, Ms. Marvel, followed by Hawkeye. Those are all shows that are supposed to be coming out this year after WandaVision, the one we're here to talk about. Last thing I want to say before we get into WandaVision deeply is the rumor, and it's a rumor, but I'm excited about it if it's true, and I think it is true, is Chris Evans will be back at as Captain America in one, if not two, films. What will they be? We don't know, but I'm thinking Secret War, the movie that will kill me. I've already told this to my
I've
son.
Led a good life.
No, we talked about this. It's like, you know, the greatest moment in the last how many years for film was when Captain America picked up Thor's hammer and that whole fight sequence. In my mind, I yelped in the theater. It was embarrassing. That whole scene. It was a little girl voice came out of me.
That's
what's going to happen. I've told my kid. It's like, we're gonna watch Secret War. We're gonna watch that movie in the theater. It's all gonna happen. I'm gonna look. What is going on? And then just like in Nick, I go, Nick's response is, well, he died happy, because that'll
he
be it.
He died the way he wanted.
But also, that may be the last. Of course, you know, you always think that, like when Luke Skywalker showed up at the end of The Mandalorian, everybody loses their mind, which was great. It's like, this will be the moment. At that point, I don't know what would be better. Maybe something would be better, but like if they do Secret War and Secret War right, oh man, I could die. Because that's, if they can bring Captain America back, Chris Evans for that, and he can meet the new Wolverine and the Fantastic Four and everybody else. Oh, baby.
That's awesome.
Yes. So WandaVision. WandaVision is a how many episode TV series on
Disney
Plus? 9 episodes. And we're going to review, as you said, the first two as they combined them here. Each one was about 35 minutes and 43 minutes, respectively. I believe that was around the time that they were, give or take the credits. And I think
the credits are long because they have, at the end, they have the translations for all the different voices and all the different languages.
Mm-hmm. Now, I believe, and you tell me your feelings, I think they put these two out because they're not, this is a slow build. If this was a movie, if this was instead of 9 episodes, which is going to roughly come out to be like a 4.5 hour movie, give or take episode wise, if this was a 2 hour movie at the best, this sequence of these two episodes would be at the most 10 to 15 minutes in the movie, at the most.
Sure.
And then we'd have to move the storyline.
That's okay.
Line.
I mean,
I like the expansion.
It's a different format.
So I'm saying it in relationship to why did they release two episodes is because I think this will get them farther into the storyline sooner so that they don't have weeks and weeks of people and media going, what is this show? It's the same thing every week. It's something that they're not giving us answers, because obviously we are a society in general that want to hear answers. Hey, get to the point. And so this way they were able to combine two of them so that each episode going forward, I speculate, maybe you don't too, they'll still be doing this format of old TV shows, but it will be revealing more of what's outside and around them. And this will get them there sooner so that they don't lose the audience by going, oh my God, it's another Dick Van Dyke. It's another this, another.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. It's unlike The Mandalorian, which has self-contained episodes with arcs in those episodes. There's arcs in these episodes, but it's not, the bigger story is way more exciting and way more thrilling than the individual episodes. Versus The Mandalorian, I think the overarching story of each season is interesting, but it's not like the individual episodes, if that makes sense. And that's the way I look at this. That's why they probably had to release two, is because you have to, it's a mystery and we want answers. But if it was just the first show, we only have a little bit of mystery in there, and I think it doesn't latch on. I think some people are knocking this for it's not fast and exciting. But
that's why
that's
I think they
fine.
Ran too. But I'm telling you
Holy
that
smokes,
there's people marketing
totally
that are
fine.
Thinking forward like that. And also another aspect of this, they may want to get through these episodes because they're already, as you said, backing up. They need to get to Falcon and the Winter Soldier in March, which is going to go right into Loki. And maybe they're looking at their schedule and saying, you know, certain episodes double up here and maybe we double up
That'd
on the final.
That'd be awesome. I will say that you mentioned the sitcom aspect of this. What's happening right now in the show, I believe, and we could probably calculate this out, is they're going through the decades.
Yes, it was the 50s, then the 60s. Next week will be the 70s. Mm-hmm. And this is me guessing, based on trailers, that next week will be the 70s, which is the Brady Bunch era, followed by the 80s, which will be the Full House, Who's the Boss era. We get into the 90s. I don't know what...
Saved by the Bell?
that's hard. I don't know. I mean, if you're going by sitcoms, you're looking at Friends. You're looking at Seinfeld. You're looking at...
Yeah,
Everybody Loves Raymond, you know. And then if you go into the 2000s, I have heard, I've yet seen no evidence of this, but people speculate there's going to be an office kind of a thing, which I think is referencing not necessarily the environment of, I would say like Modern Family. You haven't talked to the camera. Family.
If you actually look, there is a behind the scenes featurette that they released. It's like 3 minutes. And they show scenes from future episodes, just a couple clips here and there, and there are...
Very briefly.
Yeah, very briefly. So when, it's not... Again, the format is not spoiling anything. Now, I think the format is incredibly interesting because they're not just making it look this way in post. They're doing it through cinematography and things like that. So, for instance, this first episode, which is directed by Matt Shankman, who did episode, he's a TV director.
He did both episodes, actually.
Yes, he did. He's done Game of Thrones, Boys, Heroes Reborn. He did Mad Men. He's done episodes of Succession. Mm-hmm. So he's TV shows are where it's at for him. I should also mention the creator slash writer of the show is Jack Schaefer. Mm-hmm. She hasn't done a ton of stuff. She wrote the movie The Hustle, which I did not see. I think you saw that, correct? The Hustle with Melissa McCarthy.
No, it wasn't Melissa. It was Rebel Wilson.
Rebel Wilson and Sandra Bullock. Maybe?
No, and
I did not see it, so I don't know the answer to these.
No, it was what's her name? Rebel Wilson and the girl who played some person as an actress.
Well, anyway, so she hasn't done
Anne Hathaway.
She hasn't done much, but she is also the story by for the Black Widow movie coming out.
Yes.
Which, so she's they like her, they want to keep using her, and this
she
is
didn't
great.
Do this. She wrote the second one. Gretchen Enders wrote the second one.
Yeah. So, but she's the showrunner.
Oh, okay. That
I, you know, they don't list it as showrunner, but she's the creator slash in the writer's room, and she hired all
head
the
writer. Yeah, they're giving her head writer listing. So but she's usually showrunner.
Yeah. So these episodes, they haven't released a budget yet, but it is reported to be about $25 million per episode, which does make this the most expensive television show in history, which is beating out The Pacific, which was at $21.7 million per episode. And that was back in 2010, which is crazy that it's been 10 years since a TV show.
The thing about that, though, I wonder if that's based on how long show. Like, obviously, there's episodes of Game of Thrones that cost more than this, but maybe they average out the whole thing. Because I know there's got to be Game of Thrones episodes in that last season alone that cost more than $25 million.
These are movie stars on movie star contracts.
Also, Paul Bettany, anytime he is on this as the Vision, you're not seeing him wearing a costume. You're seeing him wearing a skull cap and dots on his face, and they put on the costume on top of him digitally.
Well, his face is actually they paint his face blue,
and then
the
they put
and
they put, but they also put dots on his face. They don't. In other words, in the movie. I remember when this happened in Age of Ultron. When you see him, and there's scenes of him online where he's got like a costume, he's got this, you know, and you look at it. Even that, it's like the Black Panther mask. Mm-hmm. They would go over the top of it and make a smaller version, more contoured to his head, lose the seams. And they did that. They do that with the Vision also, where his ears, if you look at him, theoretically, his ears would be crushed against his head in this outfit. In fact, so in the movies, they give him that aversion, and then it's a special effect on every scene you see the Vision where they're putting CG on him. They're making a different version of him that's more how they want it to be. Very similar to how they made the suits in Endgame. None of them were actually made the time travel suits, but they put them on the top.
Yeah, that
of
one blows my mind every time I watch it. I'm like,
well, think about that with the Vision.
That?
Every time you see the Vision, he is not wearing that makeup headpiece and all that stuff. It's all computer generated on top of it.
But it is makeup on there. So, because the interesting thing about this show is it's actually filmed in front of a live studio audience at Pinewood Atlanta Studios, and there's footage of it. You can see
just
the people.
The indoors. Well, obviously more in the first episode.
Yes.
And the second episode only in the episode. Yeah, let's talk about real fast as we get into the filming structures of this is because the first episode, and we'll talk about the story in a second, but the first episode is shot three camera style, and it's basically supposed to be covering the late 50s, maybe early 60s, and I say early 60s because that's when the Dick Van Dyke Show came out, and that house is modeled extremely after
and they
Dick
consulted
Van Dyke
Dick Van Dyke for this episode.
Interesting.
Yeah. I want to point this out, too. I want to read this little bit here about the cinematography. The cinematographer, Jess Hall, used 47 different camera lenses for the 7 time periods covered in WandaVision, many of which were modern lenses custom modified to keep characteristics of the actual period lenses. Lighting had to be adjusted, too. Tungsten lights were mainly used for the 50s to 70s episodes, the lights of those eras, and LED lights are started to be used in 2000s episodes.
So 7 time periods, you say,
As Hale explains that this was the correct timeline for when equipment entered the filmmaking vocabulary.
7 time periods, 9 episodes.
50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000s, 2010s.
So,
but then I'm thinking that they eventually stop this and it becomes an action movie.
Well, that's what I'm saying. If it's 9 episodes, are we going to hit the final two aren't even dealing with the time period?
She could be out of it. It could be in space. Who knows? And that's exciting. Yeah. I'm excited for that. That's the most exciting thing about this is space. I love the sitcom-y version of it all and what they're doing with the genre. But it's
did
like,
you laugh a lot at the jokes?
I did.
See,
I did. Kelsey
Debbie,
did too.
Debbie did, and the boys and I smiled and smirked. I don't know if it's me. Just there was a little bit, but some of the tropes were done. I felt like they're trying to be funny, but from like 50s funny. Which mean don't always translate as much. Like maybe it's just because I've seen all the bits, and then the kids were like they were enjoying it, but they were not laughing out loud like Debbie was. Which is, I'm talking about the actual bits in there. I mean, yes, it's funny when you're listening to the character of Agnes when she's talking about it'll be a gas, you know, and that's funny. But like some of these sitcom jokes were landing on everybody but me, and I don't know if that's just because I've seen them all.
Cynical. That's okay.
Well, that's true.
You know, but here's the other thing. I thought it was funnier when I watched it knowing they were in front of a live studio audience. So then I was viewing it like a play. So they had all these lines memorized and they were acting to the audience. If you notice, they take the pauses for when the laughter is.
It was a special.
It's a different way to watch it. You actually, it's designed that way. So if you're watching Big Bang Theory and they remove the laugh track, it's not as funny. Like it's painfully awkward in some scenes.
And Wallowitz is just an asshole.
Yeah,
he's totally
a jerk.
Oh, it's like, oh my god!
But like this one, like, you can see the way they're building up jokes to make the audience laugh. And for me, that is a different way to watch this, and I kind of enjoy that.
So let me ask you again. We're going to get into the story in just a second. What is your background with sitcoms of this time? Specifically, let's talk about the first one, and we'll talk about the first one is, like I said, it's representing I Love Lucy and the Dick Van Dyke Show, and those are the big ones, as well as shows that would be like, well, yes, I guess, The Honeymooners. But so do you have a history with watching those shows or love those shows?
Not really. My history of watching sitcoms from like this time period, maybe.
Nick at Night?
Well, no, it'd be things like The Flintstones, right? It's an animated sitcom. So it's a different kind of animal, but it's still in the same universe of sitcoms, but it's the same time period as well. Like, you know, so that's more of my understanding of that. I've watched things like this before. I've watched sitcoms like that, but I wouldn't say I've watched a bunch of them.
I will say that, obviously not in a while, but back in the 70s and the 80s, watching reruns, be them at evenings
rerun?
Or at night or even during the day, you know, I've seen I Love Lucy a bunch back then. I haven't watched it in literally decades, but I've seen enough of it. And I will attest that I believe that I think it's only 6 seasons, but it might be even less. The 6 seasons of Dick Van Dyke Show, although I probably couldn't sit through them really much now, it still holds up as one of the funny best shows of that time period. The Dick Van Dyke Show has got solid, and in so I thought they really were able to mimic that well. Now, when we get to the second episode, we evolve to the later 60s or late 60s in general. And I've heard people obviously make a lot of reference to Bewitched.
Because of the animated opening.
Yes, but also the Bewitched, people do think about the later years, but Bewitched also started in 1964. So it's actually an earlier show that was black and white that went to color. But the other show that really represents the second episode is Andy Griffith's show, because it's filmed on film or it's on location, and there is a audience, be it canned or whatnot, but that's a show that we get to see. We're outside of just the studio room. We're outside of the office room. We're actually going outside, and that's what the Andy Griffith Show and obviously shows like Bewitched and I Dream of Jeannie all did that. They eventually expanded outward, and as we're going to go into the 70s, we're going to see all those tropes.
Well, we know a couple of the houses that we see. The house Vision and Wanda live in, at least in the second episode, we see the outside, and that's the same house from National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation.
That street was where they
all exist. It's the Warner Brothers lot,
yeah.
Back lot. So I'm assuming this is all shot on the Warner Brothers back lot, which I could be wrong with that, but it makes sense if they're going to be shooting the houses there and the streets there, and why not shoot the gazebo there and all that.
Do you like this show?
Oh, I love it. Watching it a second time was even better. I think because I'm a sucker. I am a sucker for a good mystery show. Legion did that a lot to me, where it was like, what's going on with this Lost?
Obviously, he loves Murder, She Wrote, folks. He cannot get enough.
Not mystery shows that are solved in one episode, where it's the whodunit. But this is
Jake and the Fat Man.
This is definitely a Lost. It makes me feel like Lost. Like, I got to follow these theories. They're hiding Easter eggs. Hopefully they're smart enough and they're giving it to us. But I'm loving this. I think it's fantastic. What about you?
I am definitely loving it. I found, maybe there's a little bit of tedium knowing that I have to sit through some of these sitcom tropes, and it's not a bad thing, but it is like, I'm like, okay, I got it. I'm kind of wanting to go forward, but I'll still stay on the journey, and I'm appreciating the filmmaking and the style and all of that. And the second episode starts giving me more, so I know I will get more as I go along.
Yeah, before we watched there's the Marvel Legends TV show, which is just recapping characters, and they only have two episodes with Scarlet Witch and
Six Vision. Minutes each, I think.
Yeah, it was a nice little recap of that, and it gives you a little, I mean, not that I need the recap, but it was nice for Kelsey probably to see that a little bit more than me. So we watched those. I want to talk about the name of the show, WandaVision.
Mm-hmm.
I want to know what the pitch was like when they came up with that.
Yeah, when they announced this way back when, before you realized it was referencing to a television thing, people were like, why are you calling this? Because the comic it's based on, or one of the many comics picked up, is a miniseries that was The Vision and Scarlet Witch, or Scarlet Witch and The Vision. And it's like, why would you not use her name if you're going to use his character name? And so now that we know it's a television reference, I think it's brilliant, obviously.
I think it's great too, which makes me question, though. Like, WandaVision, that's really clever. It's got layers to it. It's deep. It's interesting. And then you look at the next one, it's like The Falcon and the Winter Soldier. Well, that's not going to have any deep meaning to it. Now you just combine the two names. Like, let's get out
Loki?
Of here.
Loki? What is that?
But I think WandaVision is actually a clever name that they... When it popped up in their head to call it that, it must have been like, oh, that, yeah, absolutely. We'll talk about each episode. We'll go through each episode right now.
Episode one.
We have the opening Marvel Studios animation, which is great. If you notice in there, there's actually the Tony Stark Iron Man snap, which we have not seen in the opening animation before, because the last movie we had was Endgame. So that's been added new. And then the...
Far From Home.
Was it in the Far From Home?
No, I'm just saying that was the last movie. No,
it might have been in Far From Home. Now that I always forget that movie was the last one. I always forget that they end the phases with that movie. That was so weird. Anyways, they shrink they shrink down to standard def or 4x3, and they go black and white, and they kind of go a mono soundtrack with the audio, which is great. Puts you in the mood. We're on 2800 is the name. I don't know the name of the street, but we're in Westview City. So some street in Westview City, 2800. I don't think that has any comic book reference to it.
Well, the town of Westview, people are referencing online, and I think this is interesting. I mean, because there's a lot buried in here, is you could take, because she's from the city of the country of Sokovia, which is in far eastern Europe, and one of the things people refer to America is that's the West, and because of her growing up watching American television, and people speculate that, you know, a lot of this show is going to be influenced by her watching American television, her view of the West. That's why that may be another name that's referencing, like, oh, that's the West view. That's clever. Her view of the West.
Clever. You start off, you know, there's breakfast. Vision doesn't eat food. They're having an issue over August 23rd. There's a heart, and they can't figure out what it is. So there's a mystery. Actually, I should start off. They pull into their driveway with the tin cans. They just bought a house. That's kind of the opening to the television show.
They do the Dick Van Dyke in where she falls, or he goes through the ottoman. If you ever know the Dick Van Dyke show, he would either trip or avoid the ottoman that he was walking into.
So Vision's going to go to work, and he changes into Paul Bettany. Mm-hmm. And I'm okay with that. There's a lot of times we talk about this on all of our podcasts. You can go to iTunes or BennettBrothersPodcast.wordpress.com to get all our previous podcasts. We talk about this all the time, about how it's always a thing to be able to show the pretty people's face by removing their masks.
I like the little commercial you just put in there. That's nice.
Oh, you like that?
Yeah. Oh, by the way, also, did you notice the reference we went past where he gets hit in the head with the plate? And that's when he makes the comment about flying saucers. And she goes, oh, that's my husband with his hard head. Remember how hard it was for her to kill his head at the end of... No, seriously.
Like when she was pulling out the
soul stone. No, not the soul. It's mind stone. Yes. People reference, like, oh, that's she's referencing that as headset. I'm just telling you what's out there. People are doing it.
Hard head also means stubborn too. So I don't know, like. Flying saucers. Ooh, she's an alien, I guess, now, right? Is that where... Get out. That,
I don't know about that one.
I'm not buying it. But I'm okay with him changing to Paul Bettany, and it works for me.
It's a money saver for him.
We get introduced to the neighbor, new neighbor, Agnes, who's played by Catherine Hahn. She was the voice of Doc Ock in Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. She was in Anchorman. That's where I remember her from the first time I saw her. She was in the TV show Transparent, which I never watched, which won a bunch of awards and then disappeared.
She was great on Parks and Rec.
Yes, she was. Absolutely. So Vision's at work. Pretty
standard
trope.
His tie, by the way, has a look that was very similar. It's got this diamond-shaped tie clip, and it's very similar to his look in the comics, as well as referencing how the pattern in his outfit.
He's at work, he's typing, you get to hear Yakety Sax.
Yakety Yak.
Yakety Yak. Yakety Sax would be great if we heard that.
That would be Wacky Sax.
No, it's Yakety Sax, isn't it? Yeah, it's Yakety Sax. Wait. Now I'm just saying gobbledygook.
Yeah. He's working at a company called Computational Services.
So I'm watching this, and when he starts asking questions about what the company does, I'm in such a different mindset the first time I watched this. I was like, what does that mean? Why don't we know what the company does? Until I realized, I'm like, this is filmed in front of a live studio audience. They're making fun of the trope of the 50 sitcoms that when I went back and watched it a second time, I'm realizing they're not trying to be crazy about it. Like, obviously questioning
what's
going on.
Like he's working for Hydra or something, yeah.
Yeah, it's just supposed to be the thing of, like, it's questioning the tropes of the 1950s TV shows about you don't actually know what they do for work. You know, you don't have to, don't think about that. That's not what the 1950s sitcoms were about. And I was like, oh, okay. It's deep, but it's not deep. But that's what I loved about these episodes is that you don't know when they're pushing the boundary of breaking reality versus living in the 50s trope.
Yeah, he's also really questioning. This is one of the moments where he's questioning what's going on, which we're going to see more and more as the show goes forward, because it's basically, as a viewer, we don't know how he's even here. The last time we saw him, he was destroyed. So he's in this world. If whatever his knowledge of being there is, the part of him who is the analytical computer is trying to make sense of stuff. And I believe that's a conflict with what is going on and who is controlling all of this going on. Is it her or some other entity? There's theories on that, which we can talk about.
Let me see if this shocks you, Jerry. Would it shock you to learn that they were inspired by The Truman Show in Pleasantville? Would that shock you?
No.
Of course not. That's what I love about it. Like,
you reminded me of Schindler's List, because there's red in that one scene in Schindler's List where everything else is in black and white.
Good Schindler's List.
Speaking of
reference.
Color, we get our first reference of color, though, correct? Isn't the commercial coming?
Are you talking
coming?
About the actor? I don't know.
No.
That's terrible. Well, because I have the actors coming up here. So I'm just going to list off a couple of them here. We have Norm, who's played by Asif Ali, who has recently was in The Mandalorian. He's in the Star Trek animated show, Lower Decks, and he plays Ensign Asif, which is his first name. I didn't know that. The character's named after the actor. He was in the TV show Space Force, which is...
I've watched it.
A new show as well. We have Mr. Arthur Hart, who's the boss. He's played by Fred Melamed, who is in Brooklyn Nine-Nine. But I thought this was interesting. As my childhood, he was the announcer for all the Silk Stockings episodes on USA, and the announcer for USA Up All Night.
Why were you watching Silk Stockings?
I would know, just because USA Up All Night, like, ooh, that was a little more risque television. And I
Again,
just,
why I were you watching Silk Stockings?
I wasn't watching Silk Stockings, but I know of Silk Stockings. I'm just saying it was
Why were
one
you
of those
wearing
things.
Silk Stockings?
Well, they're comfortable.
Okay, I mean, that makes more sense.
They're nice against the skin.
When I first saw this guy in the very first trailer, I thought it was Stephen Tobolowsky.
Obviously, I could see
he's much
that.
Bigger than him and everything, but it's like, yeah, I thought, oh, they got him for that role.
And then we were also introduced to Phil Jones, who's played by David Lengel. He was in the movie Richard Jewell. He was in the TV show Bosch. I had not seen him before.
Okay.
But yeah, they figure out what the heart is, and they're going to go. They're having the hearts over. His boss is coming over for dinner. Common 50s trope. We cut back to Wanda and Agnes. They're trying to figure out what's going on with the anniversary or the August 23rd. So they're going through a magazine of old cliches about how to treat your man right. sort of thing.
And this is Agnes's first time that we're going to see. She's talking about, oh, kids, matrimony, you know, getting to that level of intimacy about the kids. We'll come back to this as we go, but it's about the kids, and Agnes seems to be really interested in that. This has more to do with who her character is in the comic books. So.
And now we go to our first commercial. There's a commercial in each of these episodes. This one is for the Stark Toastmate 2000, obviously Stark being Howard Stark.
It's got a little red dot on there. It's the first we're seeing color in the episode on the face looking of the toaster, which is very Iron Man looking.
No. I thought it was very Vision looking because it has the dot in the middle of its forehead.
Oh, I know. I guess I'm just going with the metal because of Tony Stark
and
Iron Man.
Well, I'll give you the sound.
But yeah, I can see
they,
that.
When
oh,
they,
the sound
when
was,
they push
yeah,
it down.
Nick picked on that. It was Tony's repulsor, right?
Yeah. And then they end the scene with the quote, "Forget the past. This is your future."
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that means anything, but it seemed like it did.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to jump in here real fast before I forget about mentioning it. As we're hearing Wanda talk in this episode and the next, we're not really hearing her Sokovian accent anymore. And there's a lot of people asking, why did they stop doing her accent? That was much more prominent in Age of Ultron, but it slowly started to disappear in the other movies, including Civil War and in Infinity War, and obviously in Endgame. And people, they've responded, and she's responded saying that, well, in Civil War, she was being trained kind of with spy abilities by Black Widow, who's a Russian who has no accent, meaning that she was probably helping her lose her accent to be able to do that. And combine that with the fact that she's now in an American sitcom, that's another reason why we're not hearing her accent at all. Whether we'll hear it later, we might, but they have thought about that. They haven't just dismissed it because her accent, again, was completely made for a fictional country that they thought about, and it was designed to use with her American accent and also with her brother Quicksilver, which his name has escaped me, but he's played
the actor.
He's British, so they combined an accent that would work both with his English accent and her American accent. So it's not something that was dismissed. It may come back and probably will come back at some point.
I want to also go off of that since she's being trained by Black Widow. I just recently read the Black Widow Prelude comic. Most of these Prelude comics are god awful. There's a couple good ones like the Fury's Big Week, which takes place in between during Thor, Iron Man 2, and Captain America. And then to bring the Avengers together. That's a great little comic book that ties things together that you don't normally need. Most of these Prelude comics are just a retelling of the previous story, which sucks, and it's really stupid. I don't know why a writer would get credit for that. But this last one for the Black Widow was interesting because it's actually General Ross talking to, and I can't remember her name, she's from the Security Council. Black Widow takes her face. And she's very happy that Black Widow saved her life. But she makes the question of, she's Russian, but she didn't sound Russian. And Thaddeus Ross is like, yeah, she's a super spy. She can sound like anything, French, Italian. She knows how to do that. So that ties into this, why she, you know, if she's being trained by Black Widow, she can fake her accent or change her accent. Or it could just be this is for mind's eye and sitcoms from the 50s, or she's doing American sitcoms from the 50s, so there's her voice changing. Who knows? So we have after the commercial, we get to the Harts come to the house. We get introduced to Mrs. Hart, who's played by Deborah Jo Rupp, who's obviously famous for That 70s Show. She was in the movie Big. She was in the movie Death Becomes Her. She's fantastic.
She was in Friends. She was Phoebe's brother's wife.
Wanda's confused because she thinks it's like a wedding anniversary or something, so she's all dressed up. Hilarity ensues. But they play it off by her being from Europe.
The hands over the highs, hello thing was interesting. I did like when it got the call back at the end.
Oh, it's funny.
That was an actual funny bit.
That 70s Show is a sitcom, so that like she's used to being a sitcom.
Oh, no, she's
performing that way. She's great.
And she's in the next episode as one of the people in the crowd.
Yeah, just randomly.
The husband is not.
Vision again asks Mr. Hart, you know, what the company does, and still no answer. And then Wanda ends up cooking a dinner, or, you know, she starts to try to cook dinner. The Vision distracts Mrs. Hart from helping her by doing a yakety yak, which I thought was funny.
Yeah, and apparently also when he did the ukulele, which he does play as...
Was it him playing? I was watching. Couldn't tell.
There was another song. He practiced on another song like a week, and then they couldn't get the rights to it.
Oh, nice.
And so they had to do this. So they kind of taught
that
him
was
as
funny
going,
scene. When he looks over at Mr. Hart and he doesn't say anything. pig. So they set the table for breakfast, which is great.
It's very European.
I forgot to mention this. There's a moment when she yells out Diane, and then Vision's like, that's what we call each other. And then he stares right at Mr. Hart, and he goes, Fred, which is the actor's name, Fred. And so if that was like an inside from being in theater. Sometimes you just do little things to like have fun with your other actors on stage, especially if his name is Fred, trying to make him crack a little
bit. Maybe that's
the
first I've heard that.
I thought it was funny because he looks directly at him and goes, Fred? And then he gets up and walks away. It was just that pause, like he's just trying to break his fellow actor.
He says friend.
He says Fred. Get out of here.
It's friend. They have the closed captioning on.
Get out of here. Nice try. So we have this moment, they sit down at the table to eat, and then Mrs. Hart starts asking all these generalized questions. You know, when we
they
married,
do not have
from?
Answers.
They don't. And then
Mr. Hart gets mad.
He gets mad and he starts choking.
You notice what he was choking on?
Was it sausage?
No, it was the chocolate covered strawberry from the beginning that she didn't have. How did he have that in him? It was remember at the beginning when they were talking about different foods, that's what it was.
Maybe I can cut the strawberry up three ways is what she said, yeah.
Yes, so that was what he was choking on, was the strawberry.
Oh, he didn't eat that? I wasn't paying attention.
No, they pulled out a strawberry. And obviously this sequence also is where Mrs. Hart seems like she's kind of on a loop, like she's stuck because of what's happening.
Stop it over and over again. Oh,
yes, and people actually notice that Wanda may have actually caused him to choke, because right when he was getting a little dramatic, she looked over and she blinks at him, which is similar to something you would see in the I Dream of Jeannie and the Bewitched kind of world, and he's choking. That's when the camera starts shifting, the angle starts looking. It's not three camera sitcom anymore. I love the scene that we get to look at Vision. We can see the wall behind him, which you never get to see in shows. It's always fun. Like, oh, that's the wall.
They had to think about that.
Yeah. And then, but obviously she goes, Vision, help him. She kind of steps out of character at this point, realizing, making us think also that she is in charge of this. This might have been one of the first times we're really getting that impression that she's the one controlling this. Vision goes through, uses his power, pulls it out of his neck. And then that's the end there. They do that little goodbye thing like I told you about the hello.
Yeah, everything goes instantly back to normal. It's like, look at the time. And like they've forgotten. So this leads to the question of, we're going to get this mystery. These other characters, who are they? Are they their free will? Are they just figments of the mind? Or are they real people trapped in this vision?
I think they're real people trapped as it becomes more evident in the next episode.
Yes.
And we close with, as we're closing here, the 1, 2, 3, we get a hexagon effect around our characters.
Well, I want to mention that I really enjoyed the wedding ring sequence. I thought that was sweet.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot of sweetness in
this. When they look at, he's like, give us rings, and they both have rings on, so now they're married. I thought that was really sweet. But yeah, the camera, they do that hexagon thing. They go in. Camera is going to zoom out. I want to point down, I wrote down all the names. Babs Digby, Abe Brown, Leonard Hooper, Pamela Brewster, Sam Ann. There's a bunch of names. The only one that's of interest that I could find is Babs Digsby.
Joel's referencing the credits that are rolling on the screen.
Yes, and this is the producer. Did you have this note?
No.
Okay, I thought this was interesting. So if you look up Babs Digsby, it pulls up a TV show called Life of Riley that featured two characters, one called Babs and one called Digsby. This TV
Digsby
show...
Digsby Odell, the Friendly Undertaker. Yes, I'm very familiar
with. This TV show utilized a catchphrase all the time.
Can I... Let me guess which one it would be. It would be... again, I'm just going by my knowledge of the Life of Riley. William Bendix was the star of the radio show, and I actually liked it when I was into collecting radio shows. I am so dating myself now. This is terrible. But was the phrase like, it was something like, I've got a big mouth, but it wasn't that.
No.
It's a, I can't remember.
The phrase is, what a revolting development this is.
Damn it.
Which is a catchphrase by another famous Marvel character.
That's Ben Grimm.
Yep.
The Thing.
I don't know if that's a connection. Development if that's what's going on there, I don't think the Fantastic Four has anything to do with this.
No, interesting.
But who knows? Because Kevin Feige has say over all this stuff. So who knows what this is doing, what's going on here?
And the last thing I want to say about
everyone else, though, that was on that list, I couldn't find any connections.
Just so you said Digby was the name. Digby was Digby Odell, the Friendly Undertaker. And his catchphrase was every time he'd have to leave, he'd go, I must be shoveling along. Comedy gold in the old 1940s and 50s.
So there's a deep dive on an Easter egg for you. And so, yeah, we pan out. The thing goes to widescreen. We come out. We see a hand of someone. And what else do we see, Jerry?
The sword logo.
The sword. Somebody is, S-word logo.
Somebody is looking at this on a screen. We've also switched from 3x4 to 16x9 widescreen ratio.
Who do you think it is? Whose hand is that?
That's a sword agent.
But it's obviously someone we know. Why would they do a hand?
It could be one of the many agents that they have just monitoring. Like they have a. Do you think it's, well, as far as, do you think it's Jimmy Yu, Wu?
I don't know. I mean,
because I think that's the voice we're going to hear at the end of the next episode.
I mean, could it be Agnes?
I don't think so.
Her, could she be watching it? Could it be, I mean, pie in the sky? I'm like,
I don't think it's anybody
awesome
we know.
If it was I don't think it's Quake, anybody we know. Chloe Bennett watching
no,
it? That'd be fantastic.
No. Never going to be.
Well, you see, what are you talking about?
I know what I'm talking about. You're going to get yourself set up for. We talked about that,
of course. But I'm just curious. Like that's pie in the sky. I obviously don't think it's that. But I think it might be some. Is it Maria Hill watching?
No, I think it's just an agent. I think we're going to find out that there's multiple agents, and I'm basing this on looking at the trailer, and we see multiple agents running around.
Well, okay then. It's multiple agents. This is just some random agent watching.
So that brings us to the end and brings us to episode 2.
I want to also point out these episodes are titled episode 2.
I was just going to say that. Right. So now let's enter the 60s, Joel, into the Andy Griffith Bewitched era.
I Dream a Genie.
Yes, and we get an opening animated.
Well, before we get that, we have a cold opening before the opening. We have the Wanda and Vision are sleeping in separate beds. There's worried about noise at the window, and then it turned out to be trees, but Wanda shoved the beds together.
This is in reference to, obviously, the Dick Van Dyke Show, and even I Love Lucy are famous for having separate beds, as well as other shows like Ozzie and Harriet, and then she kind of brings them together in showing that we're going forward in time also, and then they also go under the covers, which maybe explain how they are at the position at the end of the movie, or at the end of the episode when she's pregnant.
Oh, I didn't even put that together. I just assumed, like, she's pregnant randomly. Like, and she's pregnant because she was just pregnant randomly. It went from zero to 7 months or whatever it was. Also, I didn't mention this earlier, since this is filmed in front of a live studio audience, they have video of the audience and the crew and all that. They're dressed, the audience members are dressed in suits and dresses and things like that. They're dressed very nicely, so I think they actually got the audience to be in on like the feel of it.
Do you think that maybe we might see that in a future episode where they pan, like maybe they step out?
Well, this is a behind the scenes.
No, I know, but I'm saying I agree with you. I remember seeing that trailer where we saw the where they showed us the behind the scenes footage, and you have all of the extras as you know, maybe they're standing in the audience because there may be a point 7 episodes from now saying your whole vision was of a sitcom. Remember, if you actually looked at the wall, maybe they just for a second they all of a sudden show that scene of them in bed, and the camera they have another camera pan around to show an audience.
Well,
just to do that.
It's not just the audience. There are some crew members who are dressed in old timey gear.
And
not all crew members.
And I think they also had old timey cameras, and that which are at this point just props because they're not using them.
Well, no, they're not using old timey cameras. Yeah, you're right. They're using old timey lenses. So I guess you're right.
Yeah. All right.
So yeah, so that was their cold opening. Then we get the animated title sequence, which is fantastic, but there's a lot going on in this. So
are they saying? The characters are all saying something.
WandaVision?
Yeah.
Yeah. WandaVision. So there's the 6 stars, which could represent the Infinity Stones, which is fine. One thing that bothered me about this opening animation is that in the opening animation, they're in opposite sides of the bed than they are at the cold opening. And I was like, it just bothered me.
Are you one of those guys that when a movie poster comes out and there's like 3 faces of the stars and they're on the poster, but the names are over the different heads because of other different issues? Does that ever bother you?
No, it never bothers me. So we cut through the house and we go through, and in between floors we get to see the helmet of possibly the Grim Reaper.
The Grim Reaper is a comic book villain. Oh, it's definitely his helmet.
You sure?
Absolutely his helmet. Okay. I've seen the it's his helmet. The character of the Grim Reaper, which we may or may not see, it might just be an Easter egg just for people to see. I don't know if it actually will have a representation because it happens so fast, is in the comic books, the Vision is not just an origin like we see in the movie, but the character was created by Ultron, and he had his brain pattern built and based off of another future Avenger called Wonder Man, Simon Williams. He uses his brain pattern as the human host, and which is interesting because that brings a whole thing in, because Simon Williams is actually falls in love with Wanda and Vision falls in love with Wanda, and they have the same brain pattern, and he eventually considers him his brother and everything. But speaking of brother, his brother in real life is the guy who was the villain, the Grim Reaper. So there is a connection to Vision by having that being that villain.
That makes sense. And then, I saw some place that said that could be Galactus too, and I was like,
no.
We get see some advertisements for Bova Milk. Bova
is a very weird cow lady who helps raise the Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver in the comic books. She was created by the High Evolutionary, I'm sorry. And it's just kooky nutty, but she helps raise them as kids before Magneto gets them. It's a whole thing.
Next to the advertisement for Auntie A's cat litter.
Auntie A's, we're assuming, is for Aunt Agatha, who Agnes, the character we've seen in the first episode and the second one, who's Wanda's best friend, talked about by Katherine Heinem. I believe whatever her last name was. She is a character who was actually a witch during the Salem witch trials, who eventually is still alive in present day, and she is kind of the mentor for Scarlet Witch and teaches her all the mystical magic stuff that she does learn. And she's very tied into what happens with the children of the Vision and Scarlet Witch, but we're not going to get into that in this episode. That's for future talk.
And her cat is named Ebony.
Yes.
But it's not a rabbit. And then the final thing that I saw in there was we get a statuette of the Wizard.
Yeah, the Wizard is a 1940s superhero, not a big to-do. People have made reference to the fact that there was another character called the Wizard in the Jessica Jones TV series for a 10-minute sequence before the character was killed.
I thought that was the Wizard.
It was the Wizard as far as that one, but clearly not the original 1940s.
Jessica Jones is now, who knows? Mm-hmm. Awesome. So we get the start of the scene after the opening credits, where it's Vision and Wanda. They're practicing for their magic show. The house is now different.
Mm-hmm.
The setting. She's not wearing a dress anymore. She's wearing more of a pants.
Mary Tyler Moore pantsuit kind of like. And also the stairs are very similar to what the stairs look like in the Bewitched TV series. And that giant cabinet that they use for the magic trick. Did you see what was on the front of that cabinet?
What was it?
It was Vision's Mind Gem. Was standing there and straight in the, it was basically the symbol of that. So people are trying to think that the actual cabinet represents the Mind Gem transfer. That's where everything comes through.
It's not going to show up again. That's the last we see of the cabinet. If we see it again, I'll owe you a cookie. They go by the names of Glamour and Illusion, which are
their names.
No, okay, so they are the stage magician couple, Ilya and Gilnis Zarkov, who are neighbors of Wanda and the Vision in the comics.
All right.
I don't read the comics. That's the internet told me that one. So then Wanda. So he goes away, and then Wanda's there in the house by herself, and she hears a thump because he's off to a neighborhood watch meeting. Wanda hears a thump outside. The music kind of has a change here, which is interesting.
Ominous,
yep. And she goes out and finds a miniature helicopter, toy helicopter. It's in color. It's in the gold, red and gold of Iron Man.
It has the sword logo. Yep.
What's going on there, Jerry? I also want to point out, there's a moment she turns and looks up at a window, and then there's nothing in the window, and she comes back like someone's watching her. What's this? People speculate that
helicopter could be something that's coming from outside of wherever we're at here in Westview, be it a bubble or something, and this is the, once it came through, it became this object, possibly. Who was in the helicopter? Was it a real helicopter? Was it a drone? If it was a real helicopter, was there a certain character that we get introduced to in just a little bit? Was that person in there? There's a great, one of my very first comics that I started reading when I did comics way back when, there was an X-Men issues that dealt with the whole island of Manhattan being enclosed in a bubble, and inside the bubble, based on this evil sorcerer who used to fight Conan, of all things, they create a bubble so that in that world, it's like Conan times. And so all of the Marvel heroes, it's even though it's an X-Men two-parter, Spider-Man's in it, Fantastic Four, Captain America, Doctor Strange, they're all in this world. And anybody from the outside who goes in immediately changes and thinks that's the world they're supposed to be in. And I feel that that's definitely an influence on this whole storyline, as people who go through this bubble, wherever we're at on this side, wherever obviously we see in the last episode that somebody's watching it on a monitor from a real world. I think once you go through, you change somehow.
So you're saying we should watch M. Night Shyamalan's The Village?
Yeah, no. That's a good movie. I like that film.
Yeah.
It's no Lady in the Water.
I like Lady in the Water.
There we go. It's no The Crappening.
Oh, nobody likes that movie. Not even M. Night Shyamalan.
Hey, you know what's actually worse? What's with the wind?
The Last Airbender. Oh, no. Oh, wow. I had that deviated. So here is one of the more, what I think is, I don't know if they meant it this way, but it's one of the more interesting scenes to me. We get a scene where Agnes and Dennis, the mailman, played by Amos Glick, who actually played one of the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. He was in the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. TV show as a waiter, randomly. Okay. It's an interesting scene because it's a scene without Wanda or Vision in it. Obviously, Wanda went back in the house, so she's still in the local vicinity, but neither of our main characters...
No, that's irrelevant. I agree with you, because anytime you're dealing with a show where it's a dream world or anything else, if you're not spending time with the main person, then it totally gives that fake world, whatever it is, all of a sudden like, wait a minute, now are these characters existing beyond that? So yeah, I agree with you. There's also that moment when Agnes shows up. She kind of, either she, Wanda hides the helicopter, doesn't let her see it. Agnes has her own agenda. I think it has something to do with the children that they want happening, that we're going to find out more about in this episode. And she's still pushing that agenda. But I agree with you. I thought the same thing when we saw these two other characters having a conversation without our main characters.
And there. I bet you we'll never see Agnes's husband, even though he gets mentioned. We'll never see
him. We might. You're thinking that it's a Vera from Cheers or Lilith.
Or he doesn't exist.
Or that's what everybody thought. But now there's a lot of speculation online that maybe it has to do with who's actually manipulating everything in the background.
Okay. She's going to a committee meeting. I'm just going to list off a couple of these characters here. We have Dottie, who is played by Emma Caulfield yep. Ford, who was famously in Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
She played Anyanka, which I didn't realize until later. I'm like, oh my God, I was wondering why she looks so familiar.
What'd you call her?
Her name is Anya, but her demon name was Anyanka.
Oh, geez.
Stuck in my head.
She's in Fear of the Walking Dead. She was in Supergirl, so she's been in a ton of stuff. We get Beverly, who's played by Jolene Purdy. She was in Donnie Darko, Under the Dome. She was in Breaking Bad. And then Geraldine here, who's played by... I had the name before. Tiona? I think T-E-Y-O-N-A-H. I know that's your favorite part. Tiona Paris. She was in Dear White People, Chirac, and I remember her most from Mad Men.
Yeah, Tiona Paris is relevant here. And we can go ahead, and this isn't a spoiler, maybe if it is, whatever, but we do know that she is playing the character of Monica Rambeau. Monica Rambeau, we were introduced to as an 11-year-old in the Captain Marvel movie, which took place back in 95. This is present day. She's much older, and she is somehow... probably being influenced and brought in here from the outside of the bubble, and she is into this world and doesn't know she's from the outside world. This is a guess, but that's what it is. Her character, Monica Rambeau, for me, she was introduced, the first time I ever read her was in my very beginning comic, which was Secret War. She is the first female Captain Marvel. That's her origin. She changed her name to Photon and into something else. She keeps bouncing around from characters. Eventually, they gave the title of Captain Marvel to who is playing Captain Marvel now.
Brie Larson.
No, the character name.
Oh. I know the actor's name, not the character's name. What the heck? It is... I was looking up something else as we were talking.
I know. Yeah, I don't know what you... Yeah. But anyways, Monica Rambeau is a superhero in the Marvel Comics universe, and I believe she will be in this one too. We've met her mom, who was Carol Danvers' best friend.
Carol Danvers.
And now we're seeing her as an adult. And we also know that this actress will be in Captain Marvel 2, which they'll be filming soon. So that is a very important character.
Oh, there's so many theories online. I was trying to find something here because I was going to ask you, who do you think Dottie is?
I don't know, because the fact that Dottie, in the sequence coming up before she cuts her hand, whenever there's a problem in this, whenever there's a glitch in the Matrix, when Wanda's not using her control, if she is influencing this world, that's when she's like, who are you? What are you doing here? I don't know what's going on. She's scared of her, which makes me believe that these people are real people and not just figments created to work in this environment. I believe that that's who they are. I think Agnes is totally different. I think Agnes has some... Well, maybe not, depending on how that works. But yes, I think, I don't know if Dottie is somebody or not. One of the influences that people talk about who may be being introduced into this series is the character of Mephisto, who is basically the devil, one of the devils or the main devil in the Marvel Universe. And a lot of people speculate that it could be his influence because he has a lot to do with Agnes, and he also do with the children that Vision and Scarlet Witch eventually have. There's a connection there that we'll get into as the show goes forward. So there's possibly, in fact, there's a sequence in here when Dottie says, "The devil's in the details," and Agnes goes, "It's not the only place he is," which is kind of referenced like, oh, maybe he's someplace else. But in fact, we're actually literally talking about the devil. And he's obviously in the comics, he's completely red. And we keep seeing the influence of red bleeding into this world. And maybe it has something to do with him.
Yeah, people have had, there's theories all over the place.
I like that theory.
That's a great theory. That is a wonderful theory. And that's why I'm liking the show a lot, is because it's reminding me of things like Westworld and Lost, where we get to come up with all sorts of things. And I have a feeling a lot of people hopefully will be wrong, and we're not just getting these all right off the bat, because that would be a shame.
Also, another color is the gum, big red.
So we find out Agnes is a drinker. She likes her booze, and this is where we get the first saying of for the children,
which, by the way, you'll notice you never see any children at all anywhere,
and I'm okay with that too.
This is all for her to get pregnant.
So Vision is over at the neighborhood watch meeting. We introduced to Herb, played by David Payton, who's actually not done too many things, a lot of short films. So it's good to see him making his big time breakthrough. But we find out it's not necessarily a meeting about neighborhood watch, but it's a meeting for gossip.
And again, this is also the Vision doing his analytical superhero stuff. He's looking, while still staying in character, his inner real self is coming forward, like, hey, we need to do this for safety and security and for heroing.
Exactly. That's awesome. That's an awesome point. I like the moment here when he calls Norm a communist, because it's one of those like this is filled with those awkward moments where it's just like, what just happened? Like, because we know with our modern day sensibility, like, that's not a good thing to call someone. And then they all start laughing, and it's like, whoo. And I love that tension. Ooh,
but that's also the trope of Genie and I, Dream of Genie, or my any of those shows where the character is from Europe, from some other thing. It's always that awkwardness of that
character.
No, I know what you're saying, though. I know you're taking the political aspect.
Yeah, the politically correct. When you call someone a communist back in the 60s during that time, it's like a bad thing. Like, that was bad. But they laugh it off as a joke, and it's like, oh, okay. It's just the way, like, this took place in the 30s, and I'm like, I'm going to follow that Hitler guy. Oh, this is great. But now we look back and go, oh, that's in bad taste. So I like that. It's really good. Jerry, when's the last time you had a piece of Big Red?
It's been a long time. Cinnamon gum, blah, blah.
But you can
probably taste haven't had that since the 80s.
But I bet you could still taste it.
Oh, I'm tasting
mouth.
It right now. It's terrible.
It's amazing how strong Big Red is as a flavor to connect it to your...
What was Big Red's commercial? They had to have a flavor. I mean, obviously, you know...
With Big Red, the freshness lasts right through it.
Maybe that is, yeah. Sure, it wasn't. You're in the big league when you're in the big league, Chew. How about Wrigley? The taste is gonna move you.
How about Double Mint Gum? Double your pleasure, double your fun.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, there you go.
Joel, last thing I'm gonna ask: which one was best, Hubba Bubba, Bubble Yum, or Bubblicious?
Bubblicious, 100% Bubblicious.
Well, their watermelon was pretty good.
I know the answer to this, but what is the worst gum of all time?
Oh, it is the, what is the name? It's the one, it's the stripes.
Yep.
It's with the zebra.
What kind of stripes?
Oh, shut up. Rainbow stripes.
No.
What was it?
Fruit stripes.
Fruit stripes gum. You get it at the, and put one bite in. I know. Man, that first bite, though, is incredible. That's because every bit of juice is out of that thing. The second bite, you're like, oh, there's something there. The third bite, you're like, it's cardboard.
There's that meme that shows a truck with fruit stripes on it. Enough gum to last you 2 minutes.
It's so true. And maybe it's because that first bite is so good. It just runs. The taste runs. What you do, you put fruit stripe in, you bite it, throw it away. Try another piece, bite it, throw it away.
That's the worst flavored gum, but the worst type is the kind you're like, ooh, I bought a baseball pack from like 15 years ago. There's gum in it. Crack.
I cut my cheek.
Oh, it's so disgusting.
Hey, man, you didn't have the Gushers, or did you?
Well, I had Gushers fruit snacks, but it's Gushers gum.
Gum. Then you bite into gum, and there was
goosh in this. There's liquid in the center, man. And you bite into it, and it just like, oh, did I just
goosh?
That's the sound it would make. Skadoosh, goosh. All right, let's get back to the show. That was our gum commercial.
So Vision chews the gum, and I like that it goes in his body, but we see it in an animated form. And it gums up his works as he makes the joke.
Makes him
later
drunk.
On. He could also go into his body and pull the gum out, but that's neither here nor there. Yes. So before we get to the commercial, we're back with Dottie and Wanda, and Wanda's helping clean up the place, and the radio is playing. It's playing.
Help me, Rhonda. Help me, Rhonda. Or, which is very sounding like Help me, Wanda.
Help me, Wanda. That's
great. Which is very clever.
And then a voice breaks in.
That voice, people speculate, and I agree, is the voice of Jimmy Woo, who was last seen in Ant-Man and the Wasp as the FBI agent who was in charge of watching the Ant-Man to make sure he was not leaving his house. So Jimmy Woo in the comics is a character that's been around for decades. I knew him as a member of S.H.I.E.L.D., but he eventually is actually part of another group called the Agents of Atlas. But he's a superhero spy. This is a spy character. So they're obviously moving him from Ant-Man being the FBI character and mostly a comic relief to looks like he's going to actually maybe be part of S.W.O.R.D.
Yep, maybe. Maybe. I like the theory a lot. I think it sounds good. It would be great to have that character back. But who knows? I mean, that's where it's leading us. Let's see how much they're playing with us. I like this moment here because Dottie looks terrified. And I think it takes every... like. They're following a script, and all of a sudden something happens, and like they
just
don't
like in the first
the
episode, yep. And obviously when she cuts her hand, it's gushing gazoosh blood, which is
and
gross.
I like, yeah, when she asks Dottie's like, "Who are you?" Mm-hmm. I live for that stuff. That is pure gold. Mm. And then we get to a commercial in between the episodes.
Did you just eat something?
I just gave it a
did you just
chef
have a
kiss.
Bite of
no?
Fruit?
I gave it a chef's kiss. Mwah.
Did you have fruit stripes?
We get our commercial. It's about Strucker watch with a Hydra logo on it. Strucker being Baron von Strucker, who was in Captain America's Age of Ultron, where
he's the one who kidnapped.
Do we see him in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
We did not. No, we see him first at the end credits of Captain America Winter Soldier, and then he shows up in Age of Ultron right after that. He's killed.
Who's the Hydra character?
Which character? There's so many of them in there.
There's the Hydra character that we follow before Age of Ultron.
It's a doctor.
Yeah, but we also get to see his kids. So we follow his
That is not...
Can we follow the Struckers? The Strucker kids?
We do. Yes. Well, there's the ones with... We do see Strucker's son in S.H.I.E.L.D. And then obviously when you were mentioning kids, there was Malik's kids in the last season, Gideon Malik. But that's not... Yes, we do following Strucker's son, who is in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And he eventually does get killed in there. Yes, good call.
Yes, he is also... He was in an episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
The Baron character... What?
Wolfgang von Strucker. Not Baron.
No,
von
he wasn't.
He might have been in the credits... Like the scene, according to Marvel Cinematic Universe Wiki.
I'm going to look that up later. We'll talk about that later. All right, keep going. Commercial.
So, yeah, that's the commercial. Anything else you want to add about that other than seeing the Hydra logo?
No.
Well, this is interesting because we've had two commercials right now, one Stark, one Hydra. These are things that have impacted Wanda very negatively in life.
Very negatively. That's what this is all leading towards being her problems, her issues, her creation.
Yes. So we go to the talent show. Vision is all messed up. And we get this moment, which is a sitcom-y thing. Wanda's going to tell him everything. Wanda's going to be like, I saw this toy. The radio changed. But she gets distracted by having to go on and do the talent show.
Yes.
For the children.
Yes.
Vision does some real superhero stuff during it. And then Scarlet Witch is... I'm sorry. Yeah, Wanda.
Keep going.
She's covering it up with real magic to show that's not real magic. Poor Phil's grandma's
good
piano.
Sequence here.
Poor Phil's grandma's piano gets turned into a 2D piano.
That was a very funny line.
I like when they start chanting, "What's in the box? What's in the box? What's in the box?" And Geraldine is in the box. They've transported Geraldine. Dottie gives them the Comedy Performance of the Year award afterwards because they thought it was so funny. I like Geraldine questions how she got in the box. She's like, first I was backstage, and then I was suddenly in the box. She seemed happy about it, so that didn't bother her. And then we go back to the house, and we find out that Wanda is pregnant. She's instantly pregnant. They go outside, and you hear the sound of, like when they first walked out, you hear the sound effect of Vision changing his face.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, what's that sound? Oh, that's the sound effect. Interesting. They see a man in a bee suit with a sword logo on his back.
Coming out of the sewer.
And you hear bees and see bees all around him coming out of the sewer.
He quickly turns his head and looks at them. We cannot see his face.
Wanda says no. And she rewinds everything back to the moment they noticed she was pregnant. They kiss. The world fills with color. We're still in full frame. And then we hear the voice of the person over the radio again. And that is the end of the episode with the real credits.
We do not know anything about the beekeeper yet. It's all speculation. But I'm intrigued.
So, some people are calling it, maybe it's AIM, which is the villain from Iron Man 3.
AIM's costumes are very similar, but I don't think it's AIM.
Well, the guy in Iron Man 3.
And I don't think it is. All right, that brings us, this was a longer podcast, and that's because it was two episodes. So, yeah, they won't all necessarily be quite this long, but we also had a lot to introduce for the whole show. We'll get deeper into episodes forward. Joel, just talking about this, change your opinion at all on these two episodes?
No, I still love it. I'm just curious if the people listening to this podcast, did you realize the point where Jerry was like, oh, we've gone long on this podcast, let's move along?
I knew you did. I looked at the clock, I'm like, oh my
Jerry
God.
Jerry and I are in different rooms right now, so I can't even see him, but I could feel
Joel,
it.
Joel, the podcast is 2 hours long. Also, sorry, Ed Pierce doesn't have Disney Plus, so he needs me to make him a VHS copy of these episodes so he can watch them before he listens to the podcast.
He's going
to
complain about the quality, be like, that's the way it was shot,
Ed. Which is so sad, Ed, that you're not watching this, because the show is aimed at you for all of the sitcom references of all these different time periods.
They thank Ed Pierce at the end of the episode.
Oh, yes, you should watch it. So, and if you want to get in touch with us and connect with us anyway, what's the best way to do that, Joel?
Facebook.com/Bennett Brothers Podcast. Send us an email, BennettBrothersPodcast@gmail.com, or just hit us up on Twitter @BennettBrosPod. But Facebook is the best one for us. Also, if you want to get a little bit more from the Bennett Brothers Podcast, go to Patreon.com/Bennett Brothers Podcast. There you can subscribe and get mini casts, which are always fun. Where it's more of a just random conversations about different topics and
usually in the film, TV, comic book world.
Yeah, not necessarily living in the Marvel, Star Wars, DC universe, but something different.
Yes, it's a nice way of helping us out and keeping the lights on. Thank you so much for joining us. I love the fact that Joel picked up on the fact that I was going, uh-oh, this is going on a long time. And then something else happens at the end, I don't know, somebody dies. So join us again next week for episode 3 titled Episode 3, probably, as we enter the Brady Bunch world and the mystery continues and Joel gets excited about who's who and what's what. And until then, and as always, I am Jerry.
And am I Joel?
Somebody better be.
Okay.